You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three.
Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. Becomes infectious.
And across the lane. Baker launches it. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Spaghetti Curdy, and this episode 321. Woo! On today's show, we're handing out report cards. The draft is over. Summer league is over. We still got to finish report cards for last year, guys. Chop, chop. On today's show, we're going to hand out report cards for Michael Beasley and Lance Thomas. Then we're going to talk about Troy Williams' shocking release from the New York Knicks. And we're going to do all that with friend of the Sodes, Alex Wolf of Posting and Toasting. You guys know him. I don't know if you love him, but you like him. I know you like him. Let's start the show. Hit it, Marv!
Yes!
So, Alex, are you ready to grade professional athletes from the comfort of your... Are you in a chair? Like, what kind of sitting situation are you in right now?
I am in a couch, so... But it has an arm on it that looks like it could belong on an armchair. So, we could say that I'm armchair basket grading. Right now?
Good. I'm in a rickety old chair, which I wonder if that actually ever comes through on the podcast. It's extremely rickety. I should probably tighten some screws. But the point being, we are here to grade some basketball players, and we're going to cover Michael Beasley and Lance Thomas today. I want to start with Michael Beasley, and I actually want to start with Michael Beasley, the man, the human being. I don't know that I'm going to grade that necessarily, but I do. I feel like it's impossible to talk about Michael Beasley without talking a little bit about all the things that come with being Michael Beasley. So I just want to get that out of the way first. And I want to say that I'm a huge fan of Michael Beasley, the human being, much more so than the basketball player, although I don't hate the basketball player. But Mike Beasley, the guy, I find him incredibly charming. He seems like a genuinely kind soul. I like that little tidbit about him painting his nails with his little girls and his quote, which I find particularly endearing and genuinely progressive for an NBA personality, which was, if anybody got a problem with what I do with my daughters, I got a problem with you. I feel like dad should come more into their feminine side, which I agree with. And, you know, he's got the goofy stuff, which is funny. You know, the watch is on the ankle, the 11% of his brain, whatever. But at this point in his career, I don't see any of that as a negative. I don't see any of that as really a distraction. You might question his basketball IQ, but in terms of like Beasley and that package that comes outside of the team, I'm all for him. I think he's good for the locker room. I think he lightens the mood. Do you have anything to add to that? Do you agree with that assertion?
Yeah, I mean, I think Beasley is one of those classic cases, almost kind of like a former Nick, J.R. Smith, who, you know, went from being a legitimate, you know, kind of dummy, maybe a little bit of a shithead at the beginning of his career. You know, if you know, Beasley was the one who got, you know, famously caught with weed at the was it at the combine or like summer league, something like that.
It was a couple times. There was at least one time where they like smelled it coming out of his room or something. Then he took the picture of his back tattoo, super cool bees, and there was a bag of pot on the table, and he like posted that to Twitter or Instagram or something.
Yeah, so I mean, and I have no doubt that he probably still smokes weed, and quite frankly, it shouldn't be as big of a deal as it is, but he was stupid when he was, you know, a kid, when he was like 19, 20 years old. Now he's, you know, approaching 30, and much like myself, I think actually Beasley and I are about the same age. I'm 28, I think is he 28, 29?
I have it written down somewhere in my voluminous notes. Yeah,
about to turn 29 years old. So, I mean, we're like, about the same age, so I feel like I can, you know, associate with him a little bit. I was never a pro basketball player, so I was never under the spotlight like he was, but mm-hmm. everybody grows up when they get, you know, older for the most part. And, you know, I think he's kind of grown up from being kind of a, you know, kind of a dummy, maybe a little bit of a shithead, and grown into really just kind of a quirky, cool individual who kind of has his whole life together at this point, and, yeah. you know, has a kid and has settled down, and, you know, it's pretty cool. I like him. I agree. I like Beasley, the personality, a lot. Yeah. Like, I really enjoyed having him on the team this year. I think he seems like a cool dude.
He also has a couple of huge dogs, which I'm a big fan of. Being a newly minted dog person, growing up a cat person, but now I have one, so that's kind of, you know, an unfair advantage that he's got in my book. And I just remembered while you were talking, perhaps my favorite Beasley quote from the season was Courtney Lee said he asked him if he remembered the first time he looked at his own nose.
yeah, I forgot about that. That was a good one.
And it really illustrated what, like, kind of like a dick Courtney Lee is, because he was like, I just thought he was insane. And it's like, yeah. sort of a weird question, but chill out, Courtney Lee.
Yeah, well, Courtney Lee, you know, he seems more like old school. Like, what are you asking me all this philosophical bullshit for? Like, this isn't what I talk about. My favorite moment of Beasley for the season was, it goes with the 11% of your brain moment. That was in an interview with Taylor Rooks where he was talking about, like, if we could unlock, like, the 11% of our brain, like, we would be able to do anything, like, we could fly, whatever the hell he said.
Yeah.
But the meme that became the look on his face when he was, like, describing that to her, that, like right. wide-eyed, like I don't even know how to describe the expression. He just looked like he was seeing something for the very first time, and, like, his eyes were opened and whatever. That was very funny. And he was wearing a shirt that said Goat in New York. I mean, I feel like a lot of his highlights came, like, his best, like, most memorable things from this year came before the season even started. Because that was, like, during summer.
I want him to, like, host his own talk show, basically, is what I want out of Michael Beasley. I'm here for the entire experience. But he is a basketball player. Let's talk about his basketball playing and the season that was. What's something that sticks out to you? When you think about Michael Beasley in this past season?
I mean, I feel like he was, in a lot of times when, you know, particularly on the Knicks, for whatever reason, guys get signed and they maybe don't live up to what you expect them to be. Mm-hmm. I think Beasley was everything that we thought he would be, and probably a little more, given that he was only making the veterans minimum. He really stepped in and kind of took over that lead scoring role. A lot of nights once Porzingis went down, which was important. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that the team was any good, but, like, ultimately, like, someone has to score the ball and make your team not a total laughingstock. And, you know, he filled that pretty admirably. The offense was actually really good. He took 11 shots a game. He made a little over 50%. He shot almost 40% from three, which has become kind of a new normal for him. Shooting around that range.
Yeah, he started off really slow, and I was making fun of him the first couple months of the season, but he got it up to, it was right over 40%, I believe, so yeah.
Yeah, it's like 39.5, but I mean, really close, like right at 40%, basically. Yeah. And I don't know, I mean, I think offensively he gave you what you thought. I think ultimately the expectations for him going into the season were he was either going to be like a bench scorer or maybe not even play that much, period. And it turned out that he became kind of a focal point, and he started 30 games, which wasn't something that he probably expected or anyone probably expected. But I think he filled the role admirably, and, you know, the defense is never going to really be there with him at this point. It's just not something that he has in his bag. And, you know, he's very much one of those guys that if he's not on with the shooting, then he's not really doing much for you out there.
Yeah.
But
he's someone you touched on a lot of things that I agree with. I think what I want to sort of emphasize with Beasley is there's kind of two ways to look at him. And a lot of times when we talk about these credit cards, that was a weird flub, report cards in the season, I kind of grade them on a curve based on what you can expect out of these people. And I think you got basically what you can expect out of Beasley. So on that level, fine, no problem. He is a kind of uniquely frustrating player when you just talk about the Beasley experience in a vacuum. He's this, you know, ridiculously smooth one-on-one scorer. He's got ambidextrous finishing. He, like, sneaks these. He's got a, you know, tricky lefty shot, which can be difficult to block. People aren't used to that, but he sometimes surprises you by slipping into the right at the last second, especially on drives to the rim. He finishes from tough angles. He's got really nice touch on his shot. The thing that's frustrating about him is, even given that, is, and I think this goes on both sides of the ball, it's a little bit awareness, but his decision-making is still rough, and I think still sort of holds him back. I mean, I will say I think he got better throughout the year with this. I think he was chucking more and more careless. Part of him looking so smooth is he also looks nonchalant, and it's hard to kind of separate what is not protecting the ball enough or caring enough about the situation and what is just sort of a natural athletic ability that sort of flows through his game in a way that makes it look like he's not really caring. But turnovers were a problem throughout. And then holding on to the ball. He's kind of this slow-developing, mellow-style ISO scorer who doesn't make a lot of quick decisions. And the Knicks did need him to contribute a great deal. He was basically the only guy who could score for long stretches. That being said, you know, he was in the 95th percentile for usage rate per cleaning the glass. And so that means, you know, when he gets the ball, he's either shooting, getting a turnover, or getting an assist. That's how you finish a possession. That's how your usage rate is calculated. But, you know, assists are part of that, but not for him, really. I do think he moved the ball better as the season went on. I actually do. I thought he, like, worked better within the offense and made quicker decisions. And to be fair to him, he was actually in the 78th percentile on assist percentage for a big. But to be fair to me, he was in the 39th percentile of assist to usage rate. And I assume you know what that is, Alex, but for the listeners out there who may not, that's basically how often you get an assist given how often you finish a possession. We just talked about he was 95th percentile in usage rate, so he's finishing possessions constantly. And so when he's 39th in assist to usage rate, that tells me, given how much he was finishing a possession, he should have been passing more. But, you know, to be fair to him, again, like I said, sometimes he was the only Nick who could score and he needed to take every single shot. But that's also just, like, kind of the way he's always played to some extent. So if you're talking about, like, Michael Beasley in the future, you're a team that might sign him. Like, even though the Knicks did need him to shoot, that's sort of always been his default. I feel like he's going to be a gunner to a certain extent. He's going to turn the ball over to a certain extent. He was 36th percentile in turnover percentage. About 15% of the possessions he finished, he turned the ball over on. And one last thing that's kind of frustrating about his offense is that this was for all the Knicks, and a lot of this was coaching too, but he was another one of these guys. His shot profile left a lot to be desired. He was a 92nd percentile in mid-range shot frequency. About half his shots came from mid-range. And he was 64th percent in accuracy there, percentile. So, like, not terrible, but I would have liked to see him drive to the rim a little bit more. You know, I think he did get better at pulling back and shooting threes instead of, you know, stepping into that mid-range shot later in the season. But still, you know, that hampers him too. And I know I've been talking for a long time now uninterrupted, and I do want your thoughts on this. But to me, that's part of what makes Beasley this uniquely frustrating person, because he does some things incredibly well and kind of a good number of things. Even on defense, I think he's a decent on-ball defender, but then he just kind of gets lost when he's off the ball and starts letting guys go backdoor and isn't great there. Like, he's one of these guys who puts a lot on the table but takes a lot off. And on the end, sort of, I feel like he's kind of like a net even player almost at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you brought up when you were talking, you said Carmelo a few times. Uh-huh. And what's really funny is that, you know, they traded Carmelo before last season and Beasley came in. And really, I feel like in a lot of ways, he gave you what we were always looking at with Melo, but arguably a little better, but also with obviously a lot less expectation of being like the guy. Sure. But, you know, he gave you his scoring. You knew what he could get you if he was on. And he did, I think, pretty well from mid-range. Like, about as good as you can be as a mid-range player is what he was. Same with, like, Trey Burke. You know, both those guys kind of, they shot arguably maybe a little too much from mid-range, and Kristaps, actually, if we're being honest. All those guys kind of shot a little too much from mid-range, but they all did it pretty well, so you couldn't really knock them too hard for it.
No, not the worst. Long mid-range, he was 78th percentile frequency, 36th percentile accuracy, but but that's kind of one of those, I think that's like 14 feet out. He had a lot of these kind of spinning floatery guys that he was very good at in that kind of like short mid-range game, so
I think we've talked mostly about like his play. I just want to real quick shout out probably his best moment of the season. I just looked it up and I was watching it while you were just talking there, so I actually didn't mind you talking at all because I was enjoying watching it.
I wasn't paying attention and I got to catch some Futurama repeats.
Exactly. I was over here, I turned on some The Office, I was watching that for a couple minutes.
Season 7, underrated.
I got in two episodes real quick, you were talking for a couple minutes.
I had a lot of bullet points I needed to get through. So we pride ourselves on nuanced conversation in this podcast, so I had to get into it, but thank you. I appreciate you waiting for me, Alex.
Oh, of course. Of course. You had good stuff to say. I'm not going to stop you. Also, it's your show, and I'm a guest. So, So his best moment of the whole season, in my opinion, was when he scored 32 points against Boston on December 21st. That was when the Knicks were still, like, sort of pseudo-playoff contenders, it seemed like. And he put up 32, like, basically out of nowhere. Like, that was, like, kind of his breakout for this season. And that was when Kristaps was still healthy and everything else. But, man, that was a fun game. That was a really good time. And like, I would encourage, if anybody's feeling nostalgic for a good moment of this past season, that was definitely one of them.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And I believe he also ruined Melo's homecoming. Didn't he go off against Oklahoma City? And
I believe so. Let me see if there's a video on that.
I'm pretty sure he did. While you're looking that up, I want to bring this up for Lance too, so just to kind of compare and contrast. If you talk about on-off numbers, obviously they're frequently noisy, but he did play a lot of minutes with this Knicks team. And on-off, they were 0.2 points worse per 100 possessions with him on the court. They gave up 2.2 points per 100 more on defense with him on, but they scored 2 points better on offense. So it was sort of a wash, overall. And I think that's kind of, he's got the second pick pedigree. I know he talks about wanting to find a team that believes in him. Unfortunately, the guy is about to turn 30. He's entering his 11th season. I don't see him putting up a better season than he did this past season, honestly. I mean, he might have better moments for a contending team. I think that's possible. But I think the ship has sailed on him being sort of this, first or even second or third option, honestly.
Yeah. You were correct about the Melo thing, too. I mixed up my dates, so that was technically the breakout game. I remember getting a little more joy out of the Celtics one, though, but he did score 30 on the Thunder on December 16th.
Yeah.
That was also a very good game.
Yeah, that was beautiful. But what do you want to grade him overall this past season?
I mean, I don't want to go too nuts. And like, I don't know if he was necessarily like an A. You know what I mean? I'd probably give him like a solid like B+, I think. Just based on expectation versus reality, Like I didn't expect much out of him. I expected maybe some bench minutes and some scoring and not much else. And as it turns out, we got bench minutes plus some starter minutes and pretty efficient scoring. He really stepped up after Porzingis got hurt and gave the team something that it needed, which was someone to score the ball, because there just quite frankly wasn't enough pure scorers on the team after Porzingis went down. So, and with Hardaway out for a sizable chunk of time as well.
This is true.
So, I think like a B+, could have been better, obviously, but he definitely made the honor roll. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, I started off with a B-, and then I kind of talked myself into a B for basically all the reasons you said. The reason why I didn't give him more than that is just because the kind of boneheaded plays that persist. I almost don't want to use that because I'm not sure what he's capable of, to be honest, in this department. But the turnovers were annoying. The defensive lapses were annoying. But he did a lot that was good. It was a good teammate. By all accounts, he was not someone who complained about his role, even though he wants you know, more playing time and all that stuff. So solid B for Beasley for me. I want to talk about Lance Thomas next in the season that was. But before we do that, just want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So Lance Thomas. Let's talk about Lance Thomas. By all accounts, good guy, good teammate.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely, I mean...
I don't know why this became like a referendum on these people as human beings in this episode.
I was
don't judge me, please.
I was about to say he almost like makes his money based off his locker room presence, it seems like, but I don't know. I still think he's overpaid.
tremendously. So I would argue Lance Thomas, what was his contract? Something like $7.5 million?
It's like about $7 million. Yeah. Thereabouts.
When I think of Lance Thomas, the first thing I think of is a lack of coordination, which is maybe not 100% fair, but also not 100% unfair, and definitely not a good thing for a professional athlete. But he's truly, in my opinion, one of the most uncoordinated guys in the league offensively. He runs like, do you remember Quap, the game Quap?
No.
It's a computer game that took the world by storm for a couple months. I don't think it was that long ago. And basically you use the keys QWONP in a weird sort of pattern in order to make this guy run down a track, but it's literally the hardest game possible, and it's impossible to keep a guy upright, and he winds up flailing around like wacky wild inflatable arms flailing tube man or whatever. And that to me is like Lance Thomas with his double clutch two-handed layups, his screaming journeys to the rim, you know, vaguely in control. I sort of want to kill him only because I feel like his reputation is so undeserved because he is this nice guy who people like, and he did have a decent half season or so when he came over the first time, but offensively, it was just a horror show this past season, and it's not one that's out of character with him for his career. Just to rattle off a couple stats here. 28th percentile in points per shot attempt. 26th percentile in effective field goal percentage. 47.3 effective field goal percentage. Not good. 8th percentile in two-point field goal percentage. He shot 36.6% from two. 4th percentile in shots at the rim. In his ability to convert shots at the rim. He's basically as bad as it gets at finishing. 12th percentile in and-one percentage, which means he's not finishing through contact. When he gets fouled, he doesn't make the basket, which negates one of his actual benefits, which is that he shot 83% from the line this past season. But he never gets there because he doesn't give himself and-one opportunities. And he did shoot 40% from three. This is true. However, his volume was so low that he may as well have like not even been shooting. He averaged 0.7 three-pointers made per game. So like every game, you're like, will Lance Thomas hit a three today? I don't know, he might, but he's definitely not going to hit another one. So
yeah, I swear to you, if you'd have asked me to guess what his three-point percentage was for this year, just based off like what I remember about him playing, I would guess 30% or lower. Because I swear anytime it mattered that they passed him the ball and they actually needed the three-pointer and he would have a wide open look, it clanged. I mean, he was just woeful on offense. It was really bad. I mean, I don't want to pile on him and just like turn this into like a Lance Thomas roast, but like, dude, he was...
It feels a little dirty, but people still like ride for him in a way that I find frustrating. I don't want to be, you know, this is just part of what we do. So you got to grin and bear it and rag on him a little bit. But he just, like, he's someone, okay, so you said I wouldn't have known that he shot that much from three. Because basically he shot great from the corners and terrible from above the break. And so anytime like that happened, he was in the bottom of the league. But he's also someone like him who's supposed to be kind of like who should be maybe a fundamentals guy, someone who's like strong in defense allegedly. He was 22nd percentile in turnover percentage. He also turned the ball over a ton. He was 4th percentile in assist percentage. He didn't get anyone else an open look. He didn't get shots for himself. He didn't get shots for anyone else. He turned it over. He couldn't finish at the rim. He was 8th percentile in usage percentage, which is like, okay, you aren't very good offensively, so maybe you know your role. That's not the worst thing ever. Yet, he was 28th percentile in assist to usage percentage. So even though he didn't finish any possessions, he still was like way underperforming the amount of assists you would have expected from someone. He's just, his offense is so bad that he has to be a tremendous defender to be a net positive, and he's not anymore. I think he's had moments, but he doesn't get blocks. He doesn't get steals. He fouls a ton, actually. He's 8th percentile in foul percentage. He's fouling guys a lot. And his on-ball defense is, like, okay. That's probably the best part. I don't know. Like, what would your argument be for him defensively if you had to make one?
I don't know, man. Like, I just feel like, I don't know if maybe it's just he's, like, aging out of his defensive ability. But even the season before this past season, I can remember him being a pretty good one-on-one defender, at least. Like, I don't really remember enough about what he was like as a team defender then, but the team defense was just so atrocious during the Rose year anyway that it wasn't even really worth looking at. But as a one-on-one defender, I can remember him being pretty good during the Rose year. And in this past year, it never stood out to me. No. You know, I never watched him play on defense and thought, like, oh, that was above average. Like, I'm glad that he's out there instead of somebody else. It was always just like, dude, like, can we get somebody else in here, please? Like, this really is not going great.
He could occasionally put together an impressive possession or two against someone like a Giannis, but never with enough consistency that it was an overall positive effect, I think.
Yeah, I feel like he's earned this reputation that I don't necessarily know if he deserves, you know? Because it's not even like, so, you and I talk about this fairly often, and we'll probably talk about it again in a minute when we get to our last item. But, like, Ron Baker can't really shoot worth a damn. And he tries really hard on defense, and something just best lineups and on-offs and everything else, he always seems to show up near the top of those lists. Lance Thomas, you would expect to see those same things based off his rep. But he's consistently like near the bottom of those same lists. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's that's where it's just like something doesn't match up, like with the eyes to the stats to everything. Like, I don't know where this reputation really has like come from, other than a few good one-on-one possessions, such as with Giannis a couple years ago.
Right.
He locked him up pretty good a few times, and I think he did LeBron pretty well. Like, he can do well against that sort
of
player.
He's strong and quick, you know, on some level defensively. So, like, there's something there. I think a lot of it is, as a fan, you want to find diamonds in the rough. It's the same reason why Knicks fans love John Starks so much. Like, it's always a good story when someone just, like, who clearly isn't that most naturally talented gives you something that goes beyond what you see their natural abilities being. So, like, you root for him and you want him to be better than he is. But I was glad you brought up Ron Baker, because my next bullet point was Ron Baker is better than Lance Thomas right now, and that's someone who people think doesn't even deserve to be in the NBA. I don't agree with them, but his effect on the team, I think, is much more positive, and he makes half the money than Lance Thomas does. I mean, Lance Thomas, these stats have noise, but his net rating is minus 5.9, not good. His on-off is minus 4.8. They're 4.8 worse. 4.8 points worse per 100 with him on the court than off. A reminder, Beasley, someone who gets maligned as being a complete bonehead and a defensive nothing, was only minus 0.2. Lance Thomas is basically minus 0.5. So as bad as you think Beasley's defense is, I assert that Lance Thomas's offense is like 10 times worse and makes him a much less effective player overall. I like the guy. I'm glad he got, you know, his bag. I got nothing against the fact that he's making that contract. But when people talk about like Baker not deserving to be in the NBA, like, Lance Thomas is a very fringe NBA player who got a lot of minutes because for some reason Jeff Hornacek loved him and the Knicks were terrible, maybe trying to tank on purpose. I don't know. But he's just not very good at basketball, and he's someone that if he's playing any sort of heavy role on your team's in trouble.
Yeah, I tell you what, the only thing about David Fizdale that has worried me a little bit is when he made that comment where he said he thinks that Lance Thomas could potentially be the Knicks version of Draymond Green. And I'm like, dude, I don't know what you see. I mean, I guess if you squint hard enough, I could look like Draymond Green too. But it doesn't make me Draymond Green or anything even close. He's not even a facsimile of Draymond Green. He can't pass the ball. He can't shoot the ball. He doesn't rebound super great for his position. He's not. He can't dribble. He's clearly not an all-world defender like Draymond Green is. Like, that is not happening, dude. Like, that is no. Like, please do not play Lance Thomas as many minutes as you would a Draymond Green. Or this next season is just going to be an unwatchable disaster. Like, on an epic scale, it's just going to be terrible.
That's one thing I've come to. I'm just giving Fizdale a pass for this stuff. Like, clearly he gasses his players up with wild comparisons. I can't believe that he believes that, but he thinks he's got to, you know.
Well, do you want me to read the full quote just so we can?
Oh, God. Yeah, sure. Let's do it. I've said it before in the podcast. Let's do it.
He's a Swiss Army knife type of player that can guard multiple positions, and you can run offense through him, the coach told WFAN. I think he can push the ball off the break a lot like Draymond Green plays. Obviously, the thing I'm going to demand from Lance is to play defense like Draymond and be a guy that's pushing to be a first-team all-defender.
I want to say something. I love, actually, the Swiss Army knife comparison because, in my opinion, Swiss Army knives are the most overrated tool in the entire world. There are always less tools than you think there will be. They are always dull and ineffective, and you can never get the one you need out in time in order to use it when you need it. You're, like, fumbling with it. Where's the little, like, indent that I can get my finger in and yank it out? Swiss Army knives suck.
Yeah, I agree, actually. Leathermans are 1,000 times better than Swiss Army knives.
So
you ever have a Leatherman? Leathermans are the shit.
Yeah.
I mean, Leathermans are legitimately only one of, like... Like, if I could only have, like, two tools, I'd have, like, a hammer and a Leatherman. That would be it. Like, ooh. Boom, done.
That's good.
Those are good tools.
Power drills is up there. Top 5 tool. I'm not a big tool guy, but having a drill comes in handy.
Oh, dude, it makes your life so much easier. Like, have you ever tried to, like, screw, like, a drywall screw into drywall by hand? It is a pain in the ass.
Screwing anything is such a pain in the ass.
Yeah, oh, it makes your wrist hurt. Man, forget it.
Anyway. I think we figured it out. Draymond Green is a Leatherman. And Lance Thomas is
the Swiss Army knife.
The Swiss Army knife.
But not even the good one with the corkscrew. He's the little tiny starter one.
Oh, my God. The keychain
and the
one.
Knife and the... Yes, exactly.
He's an old, rusty keychain Swiss Army knife. I'm giving him a D+. I just can't.
I'm going to go D. I'm even going lower than D. You. And I'm normally the guy to give really like nice grades to be nice to these guys. But... I'm going with a D. I feel like the return on investment is so low with Lance. You know what
so
I mean?
And I just want people to know that he's not good. He's not good. People think he's good still. And I'm all for the like I love Frank, who's a defense first guy, but Frank is a borderline, if not elite defender, and Lance Thomas is not that and does not have that effect on the team.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like Frank. I was saying when we were talking in the posting and toasting Slack earlier, you know, I made a comment of like, Frank, I know it was just Summer League, but you notice such a huge difference, even just in Summer League where everything is kind of unstructured and messy.
Yeah.
There was a huge difference in the Knicks defense at the point of attack when he wasn't out there. And you don't notice a damn thing like that with Lance Thomas, you know, it's not there.
No. There may be, you know, you might be able to go back and find some matchup where in a particular game it was better to have him on against a particular opponent. Fine. But overall, on balance, not getting it done. So, all right. We're in agreement. I do want to talk about the surprising release of Troy Williams by the New York Knicks. But before we do that, just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast, your team every day. If you got a moment, head on over to iTunes. I always screw that up. And rate us 5 stars. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. So Troy Williams has been cut, released, waived, disrespected, whatever you want to say. He's no longer on the Knicks. And it's raised the question, why now? Why did they do this now of all times? And I would like to raise the question to you, Alex. Is it possible that the Knicks were just not that impressed with where he was this summer and decided, you know what, doesn't have a future with us, let's cut him now and let him, you know, find another team? Or do you find some other, you know, more complex explanation for what's going on here? What do you make of the timing of this?
Well, so there's like, I think there's probably like two possible explanations for it. The first one, the non-tinfoil hat explanation is exactly what you said, that, you know, they looked at him in summer league maybe, and they were like, okay, you know, we already have Kevin Knox on the roster. We just signed Mario Hezonja. We still technically have Courtney Lee on the roster, and they're, you know, apparently trying to trade him maybe, but maybe not, who knows, but hopefully they are. But at any rate, you know, and then you have Tim Hardaway, you can shift down a little bit. So you have a lot of players in that general, you know, wing player range already. Yeah. So maybe they just looked at him and were like, you know, we have to trim the roster at some point. One thing I've noticed about this front office is that they're very, they seem very savvy to doing things that will play well with agents of these players.
Yeah.
So this might have been a good move just from like a player team agent relations perspective of, you know, you cut Troy now, gives him the whole rest of the summer to latch on somewhere else for, you know, training camp, or maybe even get a guaranteed deal somewhere else, somewhere where there's, you know, a little bit of a void at the wing that, you know, maybe he could get more playing time somewhere. But, I mean, that's probably the reason, and they had to cut somebody at some point regardless. So if they were so sure of it now that they weren't going to, you know, really have a role for him this season, figure just rip the Band-Aid off now. Don't even let it get to training camp and let there be like a whole deal of guys competing with each other and whatever. So that people, maybe so the players can feel more secure, you know, with their place and not feel like they have to kill themselves to, you know, keep their roster spot or whatever. Sure. But, I mean, if you want to put on the tinfoil hat, though, that it's possible that maybe they did this because they have some sort of move that they think is lined up coming in the near future, where they might use their – they still have the biannual exception, the, like, roughly $3 million exception that they can use. So should they have someone lined up for that, maybe David Nwaba – or something like that, you know, if they think that they have a shot at him.
Who's I would obviously love that. I was confused why he wasn't kept.
Well, I think they did that to clear up the space to sign for Jabari Parker for all that money. But, I mean,
killed
you know,
the Knicks
maybe
last year, so I don't want to pull like a classic, oh, he was good against us, so let's get him, because that doesn't always work out. But there's a lot to like with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's... I think that, like, Nwaba, not to get too off track, but I think Nwaba eventually could, like, and maybe he already is, a player that just is conducive to, like, a winning team. Yeah. Like, just one of those guys that you need, whether you start him or bring him off the bench, where he's just going to come in, kind of knows his role, you know, takes smart shots, plays defense, rebounds the ball pretty well for his position. I mean, he seems like a good player to me. So I certainly wouldn't be against trying to take a flyer on him, even if it's like what they did with Hezonja, where they just give him like a 1-year deal, sure, kind of like a tryout sort of deal. But yeah, I mean, that's the only other real explanation for it, you know, and that would then put them in the same situation of having to cut or trade another player.
Right.
But, you know, whatever. I mean, that's...
It's fine.
Yeah, they could certainly find someone else to cut if they would bring, like, Nwaba on board. The strange part, though, is that, like, even if that is the plan, if they have someone that they're trying to pick up with that $3 million, they could have still carried that person and Troy still anyway. So that really just, again, kind of leads me more down the path of this is probably just, like, a good agent move.
Yeah.
There's also, like... Not to ramble too much, but there's a very, very small chance that this was a financial move as well, even though it's really hard to believe. Troy's contract was worth whatever, like $1.5 million or whatever it was. he was only guaranteed like 100,000 of it to this point. If it had gotten to August 1st, he was guaranteed another 100,000. And if it got to like training camp, I think he was guaranteed another 100,000.
Right.
And then if he got to like January, then the rest of it paid out, something along those lines. So they could have also been trying to skirt that skirt. August 1st deadline and just not, you know, pay him any money. Skirt, skirt.
Skirt, skirt.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just like if they believed in him, you know, I think Ron Baker honestly just needs to find his shot and can be a good player. But if they thought he was going to, like, and I said, someone said, didn't you, because I was talking on Twitter, I was like, this is fine. I can see the argument for keeping, let's say, a Ron Baker over a Troy Williams from a basketball standpoint, not even from his contract. And they were like, but you said the other day that you would cut Baker over Troy Williams. I mean, from what I saw last season, I do, you know, I did think that Troy Williams had more upside. But if you're the Knicks and you're working with him, you see him come in this summer, you're like, eh, I just don't think he's got it. Like, that to me isn't so unbelievable, and I can be totally fine with that. When I saw him in summer league, I know some people thought he did well, but I didn't really. He shot efficiently, but to me, I didn't see any improvement in any skill. And again, it is just summer league. They can't be rusty. You know, there's no real structure. But he looked like the same kind of player, a little bit wild, not really in control of his game. Some highlight dunks. He dove for stuff. Good energy. That's fine, you know. But I have a hard time feeling like this matters at all. I don't really think it does. People are talking about it, so I want to address it. I also need to address one more thing before we go. Now, there's a rumor that's been circulating amongst NBA insiders that you, Alex Wolf, called Ron Baker on the phone, pretended to be Knicks GM Scott Perry, and told Ron Baker that you were buying him out of his contract in what some are describing as an elaborate ruse designed to keep Troy Williams on the Knicks and to destroy the career of your arch nemesis, Ron Baker. So I'm wondering if you care to comment on this rumor that has been circulating amongst NBA insiders.
I can neither confirm nor deny. All I can really say is that Russia didn't do it. It definitely was not Russia.
Stick to sports, you bum!
Despite what anyone says.
I said, I didn't say it.
Look, I mean, honestly, like, if it was up to me and I was in the Knicks front office, I would have cut Ron Baker probably.
Yep.
When I watch him, despite what all of the advanced, not even that advanced, but all the like on-off numbers and lineup statistics and all that say, when I watch him, I despise watching him play basketball. I don't know. It just really annoys me because what I was just saying with Lance Thomas. Yeah. Like, I feel like any time that there's ever been a time that Ron Baker gets past the ball with like an open three-pointer in a situation where it matters,
yeah,
he misses it.
That's
he
true.
Freaking clangs it. That's and it just annoys
true.
Me.
It's true. And I think he actually leads the league in those missed three-pointers that would really help you turn the tide of the game.
Yeah, but ultimately, like, you're right. You look at those two, and like between Williams and Baker, it's like I could see where if they have them rated mostly equally, Baker's owed like $4.5 million this year,
yeah,
and Troy Williams is owed $100,000. So even just from a financial standpoint, like, I know Jim Dolan is made out of money, and you know, $100,000 versus $4.5 million to him is probably the difference between like, you know, $1 and $5 to you and me.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I could see where they'd just be like, well, we have more invested in Baker, so we may as well at least see what he's got. And we have all these advanced statistics to say that he's also pretty good sometimes or something.
I'm going to say, listen, I know you just missed it. You poo-pooed it as small sample size, but he did lead the team in net rating. It was small sample size. But he did lead the team in net rating at like 4.1. The next guy was Kristaps at like 0.6 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And to my eye test, I talked about this during the Baker episode. You know, we did his report card. He would come in and form a defensive lineup with Frank, and was very active on-ball defender. He got into guys and could really turn the tide of a game when the Knicks were looking lazy and not into it. So he was energy in a way that was focused defensively. And offensively, he missed every shot and it was infuriating. He's not a good finisher, I agree. You know, and that's something that Trey Williams has on him. But I do think, unlike a Lance Thomas, he's got a way of keeping the ball moving that like helps his teammates. I do think he makes the right decision. He just struggles to, you know, convert when he has the opportunity, both at the rim and from the three-point line. And I do think he can improve that. And I think his defense is already good enough that if he does become a league-average shooter from downtown, he's a valuable bench bro. So that's my spiel. I would, if they cut him and kept Troy Williams, I wouldn't have been mad about it. I would have been like, all right, you're with these guys. You think they want that he has a better future? I can see that. The fact that they cut Troy Williams and they're keeping Ron Baker, whether it's a little bit money influenced. If it was, like, to me, money probably came into it. But if they had an inkling that Troy Williams had a lot more than he showed, then it wouldn't have come into it. You know what I mean? I think they could have talked Dolan into
it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like if they have them all things equal, I totally understand it. Yeah. And quite frankly, Perry and Mills, I think more in particular Perry, has really proved to be a pretty smart basketball dude by this point. Like, I have a lot of faith in him at this point. Like, just based off this summer league with, you know, how Knox and Robinson looked, and even Trier started to look pretty good. I mean, I have a pretty good – I feel pretty good about, like, his personnel decisions at this point, so I'm really not going to sweat over this one too much.
Yeah.
You know, at first it caught me a little off guard, and I was like, damn it, no, because, like, in my head...
Same.
In my head, I view Troy Williams, his ceiling is almost like the idealized version of what everybody builds Lance Thomas up to be.
Sure.
Like a 3-and-D guy who can, you know, hit the three and maybe cut baseline, just kind of goes out there and knows his role and does dirty work and, you know, is just kind of a guy that you have on your basketball team that's never going to be the star, but is always going to, you know, produce and do what you need to do. And I don't know. It's just, it was a little disappointing, but ultimately, like, it's inconsequential. My ultimate thought with him or Ron Baker is I'm not even 100% sold that by this time next year, either of them are even going to be on the team anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's not. It's not going to bug me too much. Like, it's not going to be on my mind over the summer. This is a blip on the radar.
For sure. And my closing thoughts on this are, some people, you know, have brought it up that they say they want length and athleticism on the team, and that's what he is. Sure, but it's not the end-all be-all. Ideally, you have a great basketball player who's also extremely athletic and extremely long. It doesn't always work that way. I'm not even going to bring up examples. There's countless examples of people who aren't the most athletic or aren't the longest and are excellent basketball players. So just because you have those two things doesn't mean that you are now, you know, equipped to be a great NBA player. When you take a flyer on someone like a Troy Williams and you hope he turns out, like, you brought up Mitchell Robinson just a minute ago as one of Perry's, you know, what looks like to be good personnel moves. That to me puts in stark relief. Like, that is what you're hoping a Troy Williams will kind of do for you. And this is what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, someone who's extremely athletic but raw, you're hoping they show promise like Mitchell Robinson showed. You know what I'm saying? Like, and he's still just 20. He's much younger than Williams is 23, so he's 3 years younger, 3 years less, 2 years less NBA service. And he's showing so much more in summer league. Granted, plays a different position, but, like, that's what it looks like when you have someone who's an athletic freak who you're hoping can really hit and stick around. As much as I wanted Troy Williams to be someone like that, like, I just don't think he will be. And we could still be wrong. Like, that's also part of it. The Knicks could be wrong, but I don't think any, you know, neutral observer could look at this and think, like, oh, man, what a mistake. You know, what happens with Troy Williams, who knows, but... given what we do know, it's fine.
The reality with Troy, too, is that the Knicks picked him up as not a waiver claim last year, but he cleared waivers after he got cut from Houston, and they picked him up off free agency. And the fact of the matter is that there's – I mean, not to make him like a one in a million or like a everyman type or whatever, but there's going to be like a zillion Troy Williams
right
available at some point or another. You know what I mean? Like, yes. There's always those guys that you think maybe could be role players in the NBA, and then they get cut, and then your team picks them up, and
it's the James
maybe they work out, maybe they
White
don't.
Of it all. You know, it's like there's always
It's Flight White, like freaking. I'm trying to think. Like, all the guys that have been like this in Knicks history that we've, like, pumped them up in our head. Like, Jeremy Tyler, you know.
Anyone who's, like, a track star. You know, extreme athleticism.
Maurice Endor, very similar to Troy Williams, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that was kind of a similar case.
Yeah, so.
So, it's we'll get over it. Yeah, it's not going to be. It's a very small blip on the radar.
Yes, it is. Nuanced, just intelligent, you know, well-balanced take. As always, from Alex, just one of the premier guests on Locked On Knicks, one of the premier Knicks podcast in the entire world. Alex, thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you tell the people where they can find you online, and if there's anything you want to promote, do it.
So find me online on Twitter at the Alex Wolf, WOLFE. I'm looking forward to my 5 extra followers that I always get.
Yeah.
Appearance.
You got to start lying about that. Say it's 50 next time you come on, and people will think we're bigger.
Then people will think I'm big time.
You got to fake it till you make it. That's life.
Yeah. And then, you know, I write for postingandtoasting.com. You know, we're hitting kind of the slow part of the off season, but we're going to keep trying to bring you some cool content going through the summer here. Keep you guys reading stuff about Knicks stuff.
Thanks again, Alex.
Of course, James, anytime.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another Pulitzer Prize winning show in the books. I want to thank you so much for listening. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks if you haven't already. Tell the person working at your neighborhood yarn shop, your local yarn salesman, about Locked On Knicks if you haven't already. Don't judge them because they knit. Don't be like that. You know what I'm saying? If you got a moment, follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks for bonus takes and general camaraderie. Got a fun community going over there at Locked On Knicks on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at NBA Injury Report for jokes about basketball. Be chill to each other. Easier said than done, but try it if you can. Spay and neuter your pets. No excuses. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Save the planet. Actually, you know, if it's brown, you can leave it sometimes. It's funny. When someone walks in on a poop in a toilet, leave it once in a while. 1 every 7 browns don't flush down. See where it gets you. Always salt the pasta water and take that for data. Peace!